from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, former FBI negotiator and best-selling author, Chris Voss.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, Michel Pascal. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
We have titled this show, Life is a Series of Negotiations. Be better prepared. You know, interestingly enough, as I was listening to our guest on different other shows and YouTube videos and all that, reading a little bit about him and also reading from his book, I was learning more about him, but about life and about myself, how I move through life. And I can't think of a more life-changing experience than to learn how to negotiate. Because as our guest says, life is a series of negotiations, and we don't normally think of them that way. So I'm looking forward to him sharing with us what that means to him and potentially will mean to us. And one of the things I was thinking about is how different our life and world is today than it was back when I was a kid. And I do remember that back when I was a kid, I would watch some adults in my life handle things in a certain way. Usually it involved a lot of yelling and name-calling and things like that. And it just seemed like nobody was happy at the end of whatever just happened, even if one of them got their way. I learned from that to do just that. And so many of my experiences growing up and as a young adult were like that. And then we had this thing where we could be anonymous on the phone. I want to speak with a manager. And then I would go into this stuff that I knew to do and that seemed to work, even though it didn't really work. And over the years, I've been saying, well, actually, Dorothy, most recently over the past decade or so, has been saying, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And I hate that phrase because if I do something and I don't like it, I think, oh, well, at least I only do it here. But maybe not. And so I've been telling myself, let's not do it this way. And I feel like I've been tested, you know, the phone bill, the this, the that, and I call people and I get upset and I say, let me speak with a manager. And then I speak with a manager. I remind myself that even though I may be anonymous, there's a better way to do this. And I'm still learning. But interestingly enough, now we're not so anonymous. So maybe the best time to learn this is right now. So glad we have our guest, Chris Voss, with us to help us with negotiations when we come back here on the Life Changes Show right after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio sitting here with Mark Legere. And certainly you and I, Mark, have had conversations.
Boy, I wasn't expecting that.
Conversations.
Like 500 shows negotiations. Of conversations. And many negotiations. And of all the times we've talked about how Dorothy is so right, this is the first time I think she's actually wrong about something.
About what's that?
Because the way you play basketball is very different than the way you sing as a tenor.
Well, but the way you approach playing basketball can be the same as the way you approach other things. That's, like if you're not a good sportsman.
I wasn't talking about good or anything or, other. There's just very different approaches, maybe. That's it.
Very funny. I'm sure she appreciates that. So life is a series of negotiations. And Mark, be prepared to negotiate yourself out of that one with Dorothy later.
Yeah, I'm better prepared.
Actually, Chris is going to help us with that. Perfect timing. He's a former international hostage negotiator for the FBI. He's a New New York Times bestselling author, and he is an international speaker. We welcome to the guest, to the show, Chris Voss.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so good to have you here. And, you know, I was thinking, how does one choose this path? I was thinking, okay, you said, what is the most stressful job out there? Dentist? No. Here, I'll be hostage negotiator and pick that job.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy. And I remember not that long ago, I saw this meme that said, you know, this parenting is really kind of tough. I think I'll do something less stressful, like be a hostage negotiator.
So, ironically, you know,
stress
you got into
all
it
around us,
not
right?
Thinking it would be stressful or difficult.
Nah, you know, I was, I'm a Midwestern guy. And if you're from the Midwest, you think, all right, let's just figure it out. How hard could it be? it's almost like a redneck's famous last words. Instead of, hey, watch this, you know, a Midwesterner says, hey, how hard could it be? And we go try something.
There should be a show about that.
How hard could it be? Yeah. Today we'll be hostage negotiators.
well, as a kid, were you particularly like the moderator of certain things or?
No, I don't think I was. You know, I liked to figure stuff out, if for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. I mean, a great negotiator is going to see things coming and good anticipation, be open to learning. But it's really about being proactive. You know, if you see a problem coming at you, why let it hit you? And negotiation is about, you know, assessing the possibilities. And then if you like the outcome, speeding it up. If you don't like the outcome, putting things on a different path.
Mm. So you didn't grow up particularly with watching people and saying, oh, I like how they did that or that.
Didn't, no, not per se. I mean, I didn't really learn that much about soft communication skills till I was a cop.
Soft communication skills coming from a cop. That's interesting. What does that mean?
Well, it was kind of cool because when I first started out, I was, you know, your typical young street cop, you know, adrenaline junkie, run around, put bad guys in jail. And I was at Kansas City, Missouri, and a bunch of guys got rotated out of the detective unit. Mm. And so I ended up in a car with a guy who'd been a detective, and he was really soft-spoken and just solved problems faster than anybody else did. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, now that's interesting. Mm. You know, how can you be soft-spoken and work things out faster? So I think
was he Italian?
I know. No, he was not.
He was not.
Yeah, my best recollection, he's kind of a Norwegian-looking guy, but yeah, I wasn't that aware of ethnicity back in those days, so I don't really remember.
Interesting. So actually, you got some good advice that you actually took before you went into this business.
Well, I saw it. It struck me. I always like to be able to work stuff out either that other people couldn't work out or faster than they did. And when he would say things to people in a way that would just catch them off guard, and then they would say things before they realized they'd said them. I mean, I was kind of blown away by that.
Mm. Like giving you the answer or giving themselves away kind of thing?
Yeah, no, we stopped a car one time, a young lady driving, a big alpha-looking male in a passenger seat. I mean, that's a clue. Alpha males don't let women drive. So, but if you're behind the wheel of a car, there's a really good chance it's intentional because if you're driving, you can get locked up if you want it. It's an indicator of somebody who's probably wanted.
Mm.
So we pull the car over and ask her for ID. She gives a ID up and ask him for ID, and he looks at us and says, "I'm not carrying any." So like, bang, 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 bang. Mm. He's wanted. There's no question.
Mm.
So we bring her back to the car, and the detective I went just looked at her and said, "Hey, what's his name?" As if he knew him. Not in an interrogation, like, "What's his name?" Like he was trying to convey the thought that his name was on the tip of his tongue and come out. And without realizing it, she blurts out his name. So then he pulls up the mic and he says, you know, I like a run once and warrants. And he gives the guy's name. And he says, you know, he looks to be about 24 years old. He's about 6'3", you know, probably about 235 pounds. Bang, a warrant comes back.
Mm.
And this poor girl, she starts crying because we're going to walk up and arrest him, and he's going to know that she gave us his name.
Wow.
And I was just blown away. It was just on, you know, just a turn of his tone of voice that caught her off guard. And she said something before she realized she said it. So I was like, now that's cool.
Wow. Yeah. Well, from there, did you go into, did you say SWAT? I'm trying to...
Well, and I joined the FBI, and then I was on a SWAT team with the FBI, and then I got transferred. I was on a SWAT team in Pittsburgh, got transferred to New York, was in a process of trying out for the Bureau's version of the Navy SEALs, which is the hostage rescue team. And a lot of the guys on the FBI hostage rescue team are former SEALs, a lot of former SEALs, former Delta guys. And in the process of trying to get ready for that, I re-injured my knee. I'd torn up my knee when I was younger. So, and you can only tear up your knee so many times. And before I completely blew it out, I thought, well, let me try to. I like crisis response because I liked making decisions. If there's a crisis, you can't sit back and say, let's see what happens. You know, you got to be proactive. So, we had hostage negotiators. When I was on a SWAT team, I'd seen them in action. I didn't figure what they did looked that hard. And I literally thought to myself, yeah, I could talk to terrorists. How hard could it be?
Is that also because they seem calm and they seem like...
Yeah, they just talked. It's like anybody else, especially verbal communication. People that are great at it make it look really easy. And it's really complicated. It's really in-depth. Especially...
A lot going on.
Hostage negotiation is just the application of emotional intelligence. That's all it is.
Wow. Okay. The emotional intelligence part actually applies to probably everything you're going to be talking about.
Well, there was a bit of a segue in my life. Yeah, that's why we're teaching business negotiation these days.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so because of the injury, you thought, what else?
Can I do this thing? And then I went to, I felt that pretty much since I had a desire to do it, that sufficiently qualified me. The woman who was in charge of the team in New York was underwhelmed at my qualifications, summarily rejected me. But I was persistent, and I said, what could I do? And she said, go volunteer on a suicide hotline, which I did. And then that gave me the competitive advantage that lasted and has lasted to this day.
You know, we have posted one of your videos of you giving a talk. The talk, I'm sure, was a lot longer, but on YouTube. We posted it on our website where you talk about one definitive moment where you're talking to somebody who's calling the crisis hotline or the suicide hotline.
Right.
And how you understood something from that. I suggest people go and watch that video, watch Chris in action and listen to what he has to say. There's a lot of learning in how you were learning in the process. And when we come back, I want to jump to what you have learned in all these years that now you're sharing with people through your book and through your conversations. The book being Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. So we're talking to Chris Voss, founder of the Black Swan Group Limited, author, and a former international hostage negotiator for the FBI. A little later on, we're going to have live music here in the studio with Michel Pascal. How interesting that he's a meditation transformational singer. And I can't think of something that can align to being more calm and finding balance in one's life than combining that as well. So we'll be right back with both Chris Voss and Michel Pascal after this on the Life Changers Show.
Hey guys, this is Michaela. So I'm here to tell you about the DNA Institute. If you haven't heard of it already, I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute treatment not only helped me lose the 30 pounds, it also rebalanced my hormones, healed my metabolic and digestive system, and made my higher functioning brain so loud it became impossible to overeat when I was full. Don't we all want that? So many of my friends and family turned to the Institute after they saw my success. All of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I found this to be so different than anything I'd ever tried before, and it was easier than anything I'd ever done. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a genuine, doctor-prescribed, custom medical treatment made just for you. It doesn't matter what your situation is or how much weight you have to lose. I believe the Institute will get you to your goal. My experience is that this is more than just a weight loss system. It's a biohack to a better way of looking, feeling, and living. When I started, I had never heard of the DNA Institute, but the fact that they've been in Beverly Hills since 1982 gave me a real peace of mind. Now that you've heard of them, click on the DNA ad at lifechangesshow.com and get your customized formula started today. Change your life like I changed mine.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and having a great conversation, actually, through the commercial here with our guest, Chris Voss. If you want to learn more about Chris, you can go to his company, Black Swan Group Limited, and the website is blackswanlimitedltd.com. So blackswanltd.com. The book we are going to be talking about now is a Wall Street Journal bestseller, Never Split the Difference. That's such an interesting take. Never split the difference. What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, this compromise, meeting in the middle, meeting halfway, I mean, it's just fundamentally massively flawed. It's a, one way or another, it's usually a, it's either sucker move or a bad move. There's a phrase in negotiation, a guy who wants to meet you in the middle is usually a poor judge at distance.
Oh.
So there are a lot of really shrewd negotiators that know they can lure you into a deal just by asking for twice as much as they want. And then they say, let's be fair, let's compromise, let's meet in the middle. That's where they wanted to be the whole time. So it can be a sucker move or it can be just a bad move. I mean, I get story after story after story where people tried to blend ideas, and what it did was destroy both ideas. One that everybody knows about now, one of my favorites, a horrible compromise, Colin Kaepernick. Taking a knee was a compromise. He was originally sitting out, a former Special Forces Army Green Beret guy spoke to him and said, we used to take a knee at our fallen comrades' gravesites to show respect. So Kaepernick decides to take a knee to show more respect.
Oh, wow.
And he tried to meet a guy halfway who was genuinely trying to talk to him. And look at how that turned out. It got worse, and nobody on either side of that is happy. I mean, nobody's happy. And that's one of the largest examples. I mean, I know businesses that compromised on strategy and destroyed their future, and executives left. And I mean, compromise is just a bad idea across the board. I mean, take the time to figure out what the best idea is. Don't be lazy and compromise.
So potentially the best idea is not the one we walked into the room with.
Well, there's part of the truth of the matter is, since you can't know everything, no matter how smart you are, your idea that you walked into the room with can't be the best idea.
Oh.
It just can't, because you don't know everything. I mean, I ask people a lot of times, were you ever in a negotiation where the other side knew everything, that you didn't have a single hidden card, you didn't have any hidden information? And people say, no, well, you know, it's pretty much true all the time. There's always something that I'm worried about revealing that I know they don't know. And our answer to them is, all right, so if you're hiding stuff, the other side is. Now you get two sides hiding stuff. Since the stuff is hidden, you don't know what it means when that stuff overlaps. You don't know what their cards are. You can't possibly be completely right until you find out what's going on with the other side. And that's hard for people to wrap their minds around, but it's inarguably true. And people come in very focused on what they want, which gives you tunnel vision, which means you miss great clues.
I love how disruptive this is. Because we're taught to compromise. Life is a compromise. Relationships are a compromise. And you're saying that's a bunch of bunk.
Well, it's this in that spirit, I think people are, it's meant so people should be willing to listen.
Okay.
You should be willing to listen. You should be willing to hear the other side out. You know, while compromise and negotiations theoretically is great, what about compromise of your principles? What about compromise of your integrity? If compromise in and of itself was a good word, then no one should have a problem compromising their integrity. But instead, that's a horrible thing to have happen to you. So compromise, by definition, can't be a good word.
Interesting. You know, you mentioned listening, and one of the things that struck me when I heard you say something about listening. Oh, it took, you had an FBI team to listen to the hostage negotiation, I mean, to the terrorists or whoever was hijackers or what have you.
Right.
A team.
Yeah.
Bring that home for us. Like, what's that
well,
about?
Well, even if you're sitting there only listening, there's more information coming off the other person than one person can keep up with. You know, you can run the numbers. Basically, people speak at a rate of 140 to 160 words a minute. You can hear about 400 to 600 words per minute. Now, the words, and that's why people's minds wander, because I can keep track of what you're saying. But how you say it contains at least 5 to 7 times the additional information. Now, 5 times 140 is in excess of what you can keep track of.
Wow.
And that doesn't even include the words.
You're saying 5 times 140 and 100 plus 140 plus that 5. So that many, whatever that, I should know that. So you're saying that it just keeps getting larger.
Basically, we have the ability to listen to about a third, keep track of, at most, really about 20% of the amount of information. When we're having a conversation, your change in tone of voice should tell me something.
Wow.
Your change in the look on your face should tell me something. There's a big difference between somebody saying, okay, and somebody says, okay. Now, if you're not listening, if you just heard me say, okay, the second time, there are real problems there. If you ask me something and I go, okay, I got a problem with what you just said.
Yeah.
But if you're half paying attention, you wrote down okay, because you're thinking about something else.
He's okay with it.
And you think I agreed.
Yeah.
You know, one of our former clients got fired because he was a senior executive and the largest shareholder wanted something. He was trying to communicate to the guy there was a problem. And he said, okay, as if... His tone of voice is saying, like, there's a problem here. I'm really reluctant. I want you to understand I'm not fighting you. I'm trying to communicate to you that there's a problem. Well, the investor, busy guy, multitasking, heard okay, accused this executive of lying to him. A couple months later, the executive lost his job.
This is why having these kinds of conversations over texts and sometimes emails could be an issue.
Got it.
Don't so get many, me started. So look, I problems. Saw that.
I mean, you know, the crazy thing, in all communication, it's crazy what side of it we can be on as to how we take it. Like, we all write, I mean, I don't, but, you know, I don't. You all write long emails, and you all hate getting them. I mean, I got, you know, and you need a lot of things from me. So you're going to put 10 things in an email. You know, this, 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 and this. I got one, I'm going to speak at a conference in a couple weeks. I didn't respond to the email for a week and a half because there was so much information there. For me to sit down and focus on everything they wanted and get it all organized, if that person would have sent that to me in 3 emails, I could have answered each one a piece at a time and moved the ball forward. But she, you know, this person, they had a lot of tasking, they had a lot of stuff, they threw it all in one email. And when I took a look at how much was there, I actually didn't respond until they sent another email saying, hey, did you get the email that we sent before? And my answer to them was like, I haven't been able to work my way through this yet. I need a few more days. So the emails are just one example of how we overload them, and we will send what we hate to receive.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Nobody's happy with a long email. Almost everybody sends them.
Projection is perception.
So before we move on from the listening, there's also the component of what we're expecting, our part in what we heard, right? Not only like somebody says, okay, but there's something, what we're walking into a room or into a negotiation with how we think it's going to go or what we're feeling or
how. Yeah. That's a real, you know, it's a problem. It's called selection bias. You know, it's a problem when the academics have come up with a term.
It's a disease.
Yeah, you know, I taught at Harvard. And I'm willing to admit that I both attended and taught there. My academic brothers love terms like that, you know, selection bias, and they love a problem like that. But it is you walk in. Looking for people to confirm what you thought to begin with. And in practical terms, Colin Powell had a great saying, never let your ego get so attached to a position that if the position collapses, your ego goes with it.
Yeah.
And it's people walking in with their ego set on what the outcome should be, and then they won't listen to contrary data until it's too late.
You know, you give...
How's that for an academic term?
Data, right.
Evidence, reasons, clues.
Your fellow professors would be very proud of you. In talking like this with you, we're listening and it's interesting and all that. You're talking about using this in situations where someone could die or a lot of people could die. And so it becomes... even more critical. This isn't just a good idea. This actually saves lives.
We saved some lives. We helped some families. When I was in the middle of it working with my brothers and sisters that did it, yeah, we made a difference.
Yeah. So, and you give an example of you went into a situation where there was a hostage situation and you were told that the hostage was willing to give up or something or surrender.
Oh, Chase bank robbery, yeah. We had a real shrewd bank robber there. He was smart enough to know that if we thought it was dangerous, he knew there were SWAT guys with snipers around the bank. He didn't want to be shot by them. So he threw everybody off guard. He was crazy. Before we got to the bank, he called the local precinct and claimed he wanted to give up. Because he knew everybody would relax. They would figure, you know, all we got to do is show up and these guys are going to walk out the door.
Wow.
Bought himself a lot of time doing that.
Wow. Well, and then you had to switch right away into, okay, next thing, this isn't working or this isn't what's really here.
Well, you know, we got into it for a while. I now know, looking back on it, see, this is a great CEO's technique or great, you know, the decision maker in business. If the decision maker comes to the table at all, they're always going to blame people that are not in the room. They're going to say, I got a board of directors, I got all these people. You know, it's a business technique to lay off the blame or the influence on people that aren't there, because then you don't get pinned down at the table. And that's the only way a decision maker will ever come to the table. They say, you know, I don't have any, you know, I got a team, I got all these people. They're in love with plural pronouns. You know, our team, the other guys, the board of directors are always talking about people that aren't there. So this bank robber did the same thing. He literally said to us, you know, these other guys that are with me, they're dangerous. You know, they're scaring me. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm the voice of reason here. And then you go, hold on. One of them's coming right now. I got to hang up. It was all a charade.
And there's no way you know that, though. Right.
No, well, not at the time. No, not at the time. I mean, if it happened again, I'm like, look, I know what this guy's doing. The kidnapping case that I told you about in the Philippines, where I was convinced we had the boss on the phone, the guy did the same thing. He's like, you know, I'm working with a whole gang, you know, there's all these other people. And he just worked so hard to talk about people that weren't on the phone because of what happened to the bank robbery. I said to myself, we got the main guy on the phone right now. We got the guy on the phone.
So then you do know. Yeah, and this is what you've learned and what you're sharing in your book. So interesting, when we come back, Never Split the Difference is the name of the book, negotiating as if your life depended on it. And obviously we know situations on now where it does. But one of the things in the book is... about yes and no, right? That's in the book? Or
talk about how bad yes is and how lovely no is.
Right. So coming from sales, we've been taught get to the yes and how to get them to say yes and all that stuff. And he, again, disruptive. Chris Voss is saying yes, bad idea. No is what you might want. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Chris Voss on this subject matter. Yeses and nos. BlackSwanLTD.com is not only where you can get the book, but where you can learn more about Chris and his work. And a little later on, we'll have Michelle Pascal on the show. And joining us in the next segment will be our executive producer, Dorothy, with her Ask Dorothy segment, all on the Life Changes Show, when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Chris Voss, CEO and founder of Black Swan Group Limited. Former international hostage negotiator for the FBI, the New York Times bestselling author and speaker. He says yes is a one of the most useless words.
It is the most useless word.
It is the most useless word.
Yeah.
Not one of them, just is. Okay.
No, it's horrible.
Horrible. So help us understand your point of view
on
this.
Well, maybe there was a point in time, maybe somewhere at the dawn of man when we were still rubbing sticks together to start fires, that this whole thing called yes momentum, you know, get people to say yes to the little things and then they'll say yes to the big thing. You know, each one is a micro commitment, and therefore you get enough micro commitments, you got them. Like, maybe there was a point in time that was effective, but that is so overdone. Mm. Everybody knows, you know, the minute I ask you a question, so do you like living in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to make more money?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to have more free time? I mean, there isn't a single yes that people are trying to get if they're not trying to go someplace. I mean, there's three kinds of yeses. There's commitment, confirmation, and counterfeit. And people try to string together the confirmation yeses to put you in a position where you have to commit. It's insanely overdone. And since that's been so overdone, that's why there's a counterfeit yes. You know, I know what you're trying to do to me as soon as you try to get me to say yes.
Mm.
So I'm going to give you the counterfeit yes because I want to hear what you have to say and I'm going to back out.
Does that sound like yes?
Or, you know, some people are really good at it because they know that if you say yes to someone, they get so enthusiastic and giddy. People are giddy when they hear yes. Mm. You can sucker people into almost anything.
Hmm. Okay. So...
So, you know, what now what? All right, so what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
All right, so, and also yes is commitment. What am I letting myself in for when I say yes? You know, the vast majority of the time at best, yes is maybe. And maybe is 1 foot out the door. Maybe is, you know, I want to say no at some point in time. But no is always a legitimate commitment. As much anxiety as yes creates, no creates feelings of stability. I mean, some people say... kids know how to work, negotiate with parents because kids don't take no for an answer. What kids have learned is how willing parents are to agree once they've said no. And my son, when he was 17, Dad, can I? No. And then I would say, all right, so what was it that you wanted? Hmm. Having said no, I feel completely protected. I haven't let myself in for anything.
Hmm.
Now I can hear him out. Now I have the freedom to respond however I want. It's not kids and parents, it's human beings.
Wow.
And people having made to feel safe and protected by saying no, will typically tell you what else they need to make the deal, or they'll simply make the commitment. When we had some training we did a couple months ago, I met Robert Herjavec. Herjavec is a great guy, Shark Tank Robert Herjavec.
Ah.
Generous guy. I mean, I'm shocked. On an email introduction, I sit down for lunch. He buys. We talk for 90 minutes. Got the training coming up. He said, and I offer him a seat, you know, for goodwill. And he says, how many can I buy? Which, again, is an awesome question.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going back and forth trying to decide how many he's going to buy, somewhere between 3 and 9. We're getting ready to sell the training out. I need him to make a commitment right now because we're going to sell out. He's not going to get anything. My team is mad at me that I'm giving away any free tickets.
Mm.
And I'm taking a lot of heat. So I send him an email and I say, are you against committing to 3 tickets now? Second line, are you against paying for them before the business day starts tomorrow? Because we're in Los Angeles. New York starts 3 hours early. If they wait till the next day, he's going to get shut out.
Hmm.
I get an instantaneous email back. No, we'll make the commitment for 3 tickets now. No, we're happy to pay for them within the hour. His secretary emails me back. They pay for them right away.
Wow.
If I'd have tried, you know, do you commit to 3 tickets? Well, we still don't know. You know, anytime you try to get a yes, people are vague. But with a no, people come down and make decisions and move forward.
I know your book is about everything, because you say everything in life is a negotiation. So I'm trying to, and life is a series of negotiations. So I'm trying to think, would this sound like this if I did it the right way? Are you against marrying me? Is that the way one would phrase?
Well, I'll tell you one. I told one of my single buddies, because I got a girlfriend, and I said, next time you see a girl that you want to meet, walk up to her and say, "Have you given up on finding the man of your dreams?"
Oh man, that's good.
And he got a number that night.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah, you gotta understand.
And so that's a great example that about negotiation. Now you bring it down to the minutiae. You say, as we're winding down here, I just want to put this into perspective. You say everything is a negotiation. Give us some example of things that we don't normally think are.
Yeah, well, one of my favorites is are you in a negotiation when you order at Starbucks? And
right.
I met a speaker a couple months ago who started a website and wrote a book called Secrets and encouraged people to said, tell me your secrets anonymously.
Mm.
And he gets this brand new Starbucks coffee cup from somebody who's working at Starbucks. And the note said, I give decaf to people who are mean to me.
Oh,
it was a negotiation. You got, you know, yes is nothing without how. How are you going to implement? You know, never be mean to someone who could hurt you by doing nothing. I mean, there's all these emotional intelligence.
Mm.
You know, you think it's in a negotiation, but the other side's got to implement. And how you treated them through the conversation affects how they implement.
Mm. I can second that, because Jet negotiates his non-caffeinated and always gets extra caramel somehow out of it.
Your son?
Very good. Charming kid, eh?
Extra caramel and a good day, extra whipped cream as well. So he knows how to work them.
We have lots to learn. Chris, thank you so much for putting this in a book that we can read and learn. Never split the difference, negotiating as if your life depended on it. What else can we expect to get out of the book?
You know, it's the application of it is really across the board. We got a lot of stories of people negotiating with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. I was kind of touched recently. There's two conversations I've had that touched me a lot. There's a gentleman that uses his stuff in real estate in Florida. He's heavy into real estate. He makes great deals. He and his son were having horrible problems. He said, you gave me my son back.
Oh.
Because he used the conversation really just, you know, to have a validating conversation with his son.
Mm.
Another gentleman who uses our stuff in literally $100 million deals had a horrible fight with his younger sister at a family reunion.
Mm.
And she's the primary caregiver for their father, and the pressure is just huge on her. She had a little bit to drink and was kind of cracking under the pressure and started in on him.
Mm.
And all he wanted to do, he said, I wanted her to feel heard. That's all. I didn't want to contradict anything she said. I wanted her to feel heard. He used his stuff straight out of the book.
Wow.
She sent him an email the next day. She said, I attacked you yesterday, and you showed me nothing but love. Thank you for being my big brother.
Wow.
So this stuff works across the board. It's about better relationships.
Wow. Well, there it is. Chris Voss, thank you so much. Never Split the Difference, and you can get the book actually anywhere where books are sold, but blackswanltd.com is his website. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Now our Ask Dorothy segment.
Hi, Dorothy. My name is Barbara, and I live in Sacramento. I've been divorced for almost 10 years now and have had little to do with my ex, Robert, as it became more and more difficult to be around him. He's falling apart, and about a year ago, I cut off most communication because I just don't have the strength to take care of him anymore. He was becoming harder and harder to communicate with and is appearing more and more disheveled each time I saw him. He lives with a friend who runs a drug den in Arizona, and he's been robbed several times. It kills me to see how he is living like this. A close friend who has known both of us for years saw him recently and said that he looked like he was homeless and wasn't making much sense when she spoke with him. She said his clothes were not clean, and it appeared he hadn't bathed in quite some time. He has 4 grown children from other marriages, and I haven't spoken to any of them since the divorce, so I don't know if I should tell them about their father. He is a truly brilliant man, and it is heartbreaking to know of his living conditions and physical conditions. Should I attempt to get them to check on him, or should I just walk away?
Barbara, it's not your job to take care of him. However, it appears that what you want is what is best for him, or you wouldn't be asking this question. If it were my situation, I would first call him and determine if what your friend shared appears to be truth of his present state of being. If you believe it is, then I would get in touch with one or more of his children and explain my concerns and suggest that they may wish to connect with him. Then you can walk away knowing that you have done all you can. And, dear Barbara, I urge you to pay close attention to your words. You use 2 phrases that concern me because we create our realities with our thoughts and our words and our emotions. When one says things like, it is heartbreaking, and words like, it kills me, then one may be co-creating an unpleasant future for themselves. Let's be willing to choose every word we think and every word we say very carefully. This way we can co-create a more positive outcome in all of our challenging situations.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be back with our musical guest, Michelle Pascal, right after this on The Life Changes Show.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark, and joining us in the studio is our musical guest. He's a transformational meditation singer. He's actually so much more, but we'll find out about that as we speak with him. Michel Pascal, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us. And it's interesting, as you walked in, you said how you were enjoying the interview and that the best negotiation is to be, what was it?
The best negotiation in life. It's to be calmer.
It's to be calm. Mm.
Because when we are stressed, for me, there is no negotiation. There is ego against another ego. Mm. I say that because I teach meditation with prisoners.
Prisoners, yeah.
In Los Angeles, yeah. At Amity Foundation. Mm-hmm. And we have the best result in America, in Los Angeles. Just to give you a data, in California, 80% of the parolees, they return to jail. Mm-hmm. But at Amity Foundation in Los Angeles with meditation, the same percentage, 80% of the parolees, they never return to jail.
Oh, wow.
So we see that when we meditate every day, we change our mind. We change our brain. We know that in neuroscience. Wow. When we put electrode on the brain, we see that after around 20 days, we can change totally our brain.
You're not only working with prisoners, you're also working with homeless people.
Yes, and with my friend, associate Mana Dabolkar, we create the first free meditation program for the homeless people in America.
Wow.
When I came from the Himalayas, from my monastery in America, I was so shocked to see that if you have no money, there is no well-being. You can die. So it was my wish to break this cliché. And Mana is an expert. She comes from the Red Cross. So she knows very well the humanitarian. And she said, I want to create with you the first free meditation program for homeless. And maybe you know, but the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, has offered a lot of cell phone to the homeless because he considered that a cell phone can be a chance for someone to go back in a normal life.
So it's an app.
It's an app.
Yes.
The title of the app, it's Mind Dive.
Mind Dive. Okay.
I dive inside. And okay. It's an app unique in the world because in the same app, we have meditation for daily life. Mm-hmm. It means, how can I be calmer in the traffic? How can I be calmer with my cell phone? How can I be calmer with my social media?
Oh, so this isn't just for homeless people. This is for everybody.
It's for everyone.
Okay,
it's
but
for everyone.
It's free to the homeless people. And,
yes.
And actually, you're having a concert coming up here in December, which we'll tell people more about. But people that buy tickets for that concert will donate.
I have the chance first to sing next Monday at the Carnegie Hall.
Yes, again, actually. And it's sold out again next Monday. That's very exciting.
Yes.
So good to have you here before you go to Carnegie Hall and perform that concert again. Actually, you're performing with...
I perform with Myron McKinley, the music director of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. And the interesting thing is that as a kid, you were listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire.
When I was a kid, I love Earth, Wind, and Fire. Yeah. I was abused. And to listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire was my way to feel better every day. Mm. And 40 years after, I have the amazing chance to sing with Myron McKinley, the music director of Earth, Wind, and Fire,
nice.
Verdine White, to sing with those amazing musicians.
Well, you've actually sung with a lot of people, actually, since you were a child, right? You've sung with a lot of well-known...
I become to sing on stage. I was 9 years old. I was a baby. And I became professional singer in France. I was 16. And after, I was discovered by Mark Ledford, the vocalist of Pat Metheny. So Mark Ledford asked me to come in New York and to sing. I sing many times with the musician of Pat Metheny, the musician of Carlos Santana. Mm-hmm. So, and now with the musician of Earth, Wind & Fire.
Very exciting, actually. And I just want to make sure that people understood that you actually came from a monastery that you called home for how long?
I come from France. You can listen my accent.
Yeah, we can hear it.
But I am the disciple of Chepa Dorje Rinpoche, mm-hmm. the Tibetan master. I was his disciple during 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was also in Kopan Monastery, a Buddhist monastery mm-hmm.
in the
Nepal,
Himalayas.
In the Himalayas mm-hmm. during 3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay.
So it's a thing to talk about spirituality. It's another thing when we live in a monastery.
And then you lived there and then you came to Los Angeles.
Yes.
What a juxtaposition.
I came to LA because when we live in a monastery, we live in a resort. We talk about a suffering that we don't live.
So you came to Los Angeles to suffer?
Yes, because it was so important for me to bring hope, to bring love, to bring light to the million people in the suffering.
Interesting.
It is so important. For me, spirituality can't be a beautiful blah blah. It must be act. So when we see that with meditation, we save 80% of parolees in Los Angeles. What I say to you today, Filippo, to you, Mark, what we have in your show, it's a revolution. In America, it seems that we have found the key to reduce the violence. I was so interested by your interview about negotiation.
Yes.
The best negotiation for ourselves.
Yes.
It's to be calmer.
Yes. Well, you, Michel, have taken meditation to a different level. Normally we hear chants, but you actually take it into music that you have written. What are we going to hear?
I will sing for you a song that I have recorded with the voice of Michael Beckwith.
Michael Beckwith, yes.
Michael is in the app that we have created, Mind Dive. Mm-hmm. And December 18, I perform also in Los Angeles at Tag Gallery. So Mana Abolkar has organized this big event, and each ticket help a homeless to have free meditation session.
On the phone that they already have. So
exactly. And I will sing the song that I sing today for you. This is the song at the end of the show at Carnegie Hall.
And this will be your last song. Okay. So a week from now, after his grand performance at Carnegie Hall, he will be singing the song. What is the title?
The Religion of Gratitude.
The Religion of Gratitude.
Yes.
Okay. Well, here is Michel Pascal performing The Religion of Gratitude live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
We need to be grateful. You're grateful that you can take a breath. You're grateful that you can walk. You're grateful that you can see. You can hear. You're grateful for a friendship. You find some way to enter into gratitude. That's the how to. Find something to be grateful for.
Time I need you, your glory ever present and always shining through. You rescue me from darkness, I know I'm loved by you. I tune my soul with gratitude. Each day I try to find a way. How will I serve the Lord today? My grateful heart rejoices. I breathe and just believe. I tune my soul with gratitude. Each day I try to find a way. How will I serve the Lord today? My grateful heart rejoices. I breathe and just believe. Let my heart be ever thankful and my faith renews. To your love I shall abide,
your life reveals the way. I tune my soul with gratitude. Each day I try to find a way. How will I serve the Lord today? My grateful heart rejoices. I breathe and just believe. I tune my
grateful for. When a challenge comes, quickly be grateful for that, because something's being born in you.
I tune my soul with gratitude. Each day I try to find a way. I will serve the Lord today. My grateful heart rejoices. I breathe and just believe. I tune to find a way. How will I serve the Lord today? My grateful heart rejoices. I breathe and just believe.
To be grateful for nothing at all. Then there's a vibrational match from the universal presence, and you live a life of constant unfolding of more good than you could possibly imagine.
Michel Pascal, and I tune my soul with gratitude, right?
Yes.
Live here on the Life Changes Show. Actually, that was to track, and you were singing live, and we heard the voice of Michael Beckwith.
Yes.
And the chanting, that was you as well?
Yes.
Whatever it was.
No, it's not me. It's
that's somebody else.
A friend, a Tibetan monk.
A Tibetan monk.
From my monastery, yes.
Oh, okay. Very good. And actually, Michael Beckwith isn't you performed with a lot of people, but also Deepak Chopra, right?
Yes, in the app Mind Dive, mm-hmm. we have Michael Beckwith. We have also Deepak Chopra in a dialogue with Diane Powell, the famous psychiatric doctor. We have Gary Schwartz. We have Sridharma Mitra. We have Sonia Ohm. We have Earth, Wind & Fire, Verdin White, of course. And it's amazing to create an app with yoga, meditation, music. And this app is free, so everyone can download the app from Christmas.
And is it available at your website?
Yes.
Okay, so the website is his name, Michel Pascal, and I'll spell that, M-I-C-H-E-L, Pascal, P-A-S-C-A-L dot TV.
MichelPascal.tv, mm-hmm. And I perform in Los Angeles, so Tuesday, December 18, at Tag Gallery, and each ticket help homeless to have meditation session.
Right. I want to give a shout out also to another mutual friend, also a teacher on the app, and the person that brought you into our lives as a friend and partner with Vortex and Life Changes, Stephanie Lodge.
Stephanie is in the app. She will develop the relation with the angels. And Stephanie was the person who found the title of the app. One day she said to me, "Oh, Michel, I have the title for your app, Mind Dive." And I say, "Wow, Stephanie, you are amazing."
Yeah, she happens to find a lot of things that way.
Well,
and
there
she's. We do Zen Talks with her. So if people want to follow up with Stephanie, also zentalks.tv.
Indeed. Well, we get to hear one more song.
Okay.
And this is called what?
This song is also written by Anna Love, my friend, and this song opens the show at the Carnegie Hall.
Oh, so we had the opening and the closing.
Exactly.
Okay. But we're ending with the opening. This is wonderful. And it's called what?
Teach Me to Love.
Teach Me to Love. Well, here is Michel Pascal performing Teach Me to Love live on the Life Changes Show here at Studio NoHo.
Now a world
Too many tears, too many fears I've gotten on our way. In our lives, we see the pain. There is a way to change the dark to light. Teach me to love. Show me the way into your heart. I want to know the place where love resides. Teach me to love. Guide me into your tender heart. Do you believe that love is meant to be? It's not easy, but we must fight. We must believe the truth is love divine. Teach me to love. Show me the way into your heart. I want to know the place where love resides. Teach me to love. Guide me into your tender heart. Do you believe that love is meant to be? Time and time again, I try to show you who I am. Oh, time and time again, I try to show you where you are. But today I cry, today I try. Release this prayer to the sky. Teach me to love. Show me the way into your heart. I want to know the place where love resides. Teach me to love. Guide me into your tender heart. Do you believe that love is meant to be? Teach me to
Michel Pascal, live here on the Life Changers Show. Thank you so much. He's headed to Carnegie Hall next Monday, actually. We'll be thinking of you. And then in December, on the 18th, he'll be here in Los Angeles. Go to michelpascal.tv to learn more about his performances and learn more about the app Mind Dive. Michel is M-I-C-H-E-L. Pascal, P-A-S-C-A-L .tv. Of course, you could always find more information on him at the Life Changes Show page on our website. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, and congratulations for your show.
Thank you.
We need your show. We need consciousness. We need to be more aware.
And so it is. And also a big thank you to our guest, Chris Voss. What a conversation. So much more happening on the Life Changes Show. Be with us again next week. In the meantime, a big thank you to Brent Hahn here at Studio NoHo for making us all sound so great.
Thank you, Brent.
On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am Filippo Voltaggio, your host, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.